Thanks for listening to Schlereth and Evans On Demand. Did you know you can listen to us on Alexa? Enable our skill today, then say, Alexa, play 104.3 The Fan.
Are you ready?
Let's clear the air with Mark Schlereth.
It's gone from suck to blow.
What?
You know, when we talk about hockey, we always talk about growing your playoff beard, right? Manning up, getting things done. Well, it's exactly what the Denver Nuggets did in San Antonio for three quarters the last game they played. They manned up. They grew their playoff beards, for crying out loud. And today is the day as they take on the San Antonio Spurs to go ahead and flex that muscle a little bit, to use that confidence, to use that maturity that you got in that game in San Antonio. You hadn't won there since 2012, to carry over to tonight to maintain home court advantage and to win this series. That's exactly what the Nuggets have to do. You should be proud of what you did in San Antonio, and you should learn from what you did in San Antonio that you are by far the better basketball team, that you can do this, that you can go out there, establish yourself on the defensive end of the court. It will lead to offensive buckets, and it will lead to a victory. Can't wait to see them get their Chuck Taylors on the hard court.
That was awesome.
Clear the air with Mark Schlereth.
Wow, you mixed it up. You went old school. Chuck Taylors.
Yeah, Chuck Taylors, didn't you? Is a set of Chucks.
No, I did not have Chuck Taylors. I was a Converse guy back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
I was entirely Converse. The whole Larry Bird influence. But
right.
but no Chuck Taylors.
I mean, just like for kicking around, like for playing hoops.
No, but I was a Converse guy, but no Chuck Taylors.
Okay, not to play hoops in, but
just to...
Back in the day, you know what? When I first got in the NFL, all the offensive linemen wore Converse. Everybody wore Converse. They had the best kind of big guy shoe, if you will. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, we all wore Converse, and then they sold out to Apex. You remember that? You don't probably remember this back
then. Apex, wow.
Yeah. And then the shoes were just complete garbage.
Yeah.
Complete garbage.
All right, back to your clear the air.
It didn't really bother me. You're like, yeah, okay.
That's your clear the air.
Can we leave this topic?
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I can't wait to see how they come out and play tonight. Because an experienced team, a mature team,
mm-hmm.
a team that gets it, will build off the momentum of a win like the one that the Nuggets had on Saturday, and they will come out and they will jump out early on their opponent tonight. And conversely, a playoff team, a veteran playoff team that's playing another team that has veteran playoff experience, that road team knows they're kind of walking into a bit of a buzzsaw. And that they know that they'll have to sort of weather the storm early on and try to hang in there. But with the understanding, that team's gonna come out with a lot of emotion.
Mm-hmm.
That building's gonna be on fire tonight. The Nuggets will be hyped up, but I'm hoping that you'll see some of that maturity that they had to have gained from that performance on Saturday. I mean, they were nails. I mean, the flip of the switch, the line that was drawn from game three, how poorly they played, and how poorly they played in the first quarter game four, to how brilliant they were
over those final three quarters.
Which team shows up? And I'm really confident that this team had a major breakthrough, but now apply it tonight. Apply it tonight, because now the series is back in your control. You should win this series. The odds are overwhelmingly in your favor in a best of seven, 2-2, where you've got game five at home and a potential game seven at home. Like 70% of teams win. The home team wins this series in this situation. So go out and take advantage of it. Go build on it. Show that you have grown up as a basketball team. Because if you do that, all right, now things get real fun. Now you know what's back in play, Mark? Back in play is now Western Conference Finals.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really, I think, what it comes down to is not only winning this series, but the idea that they could then go out and win another series. How they handle tonight, I think, will tell us a lot about this team's ability to do that.
In 1995, the Broncos went 8-8. Okay? That's what we were in 1995. 1996, we came out, we started the season, we beat the Jets 31-6, then we beat the Seahawks 30-20, then we beat the Buccaneers 23-27. Then we go to the Chiefs. And the Chiefs have been our nemesis. The Chiefs were just, they were just a physical football team. If you remember back in the day, Daniel, my son and I were talking about this back in the day, kind of, Derek Thomas, Neil Smith, Dan Salamua, Joe Phillips, Tracy Simeon at the middle linebacker, Martin Bayless was their nickel guy. I mean, they were loaded. They had a great defense. They were a really good football team. We go to Kansas City and we lose that game, 14-17. And interestingly enough,
you lost 17-14. Can I just, I'm sorry. I have to. I'm sorry to interrupt. That is such a pet peeve of mine.
14-17.
I hate when people say the score backwards. Okay.
We had 14. They had 17. We lost 14 to 17.
When people say we lost 24-30, you want to talk about fingernails on the chalkboard for me.
Anyway. The man in the mom jeans is correct.
Go ahead.
Okay. So we lost 17
to 14.
To 14.
Good. Thank you.
Huh. I know.
Doesn't it sound better?
No.
Anyway,
it's the way it's listed here, Broncos 14, Chiefs 17.
Well,
I'm looking at this website.
Careful how you read those kind of things. That's what led to playing well, scoring a lot of goals. Anyway,
right. So anywho, we get on the bus after that, and I think there was a confidence that was built in that game, Mike, saying we went toe to toe with the Chiefs. We should have won. We made a couple of mistakes, and we lost the game on a. I think they kicked the last second field goal to beat us 14. Wait a minute. 14-17? No, wait. To beat us 17-14.
There you go.
Yeah. And I think that's where we really gained confidence in who we were as a football team. Then we go on to beat the Bengals. Then we beat the Chargers. Then we beat the Ravens. Then we thumped the Chiefs here in October 34-7. Then we beat the Raiders. Then we beat the Bears. Then we beat the Patriots. Remember that beat down 34-8? And then we beat the Vikings on the road. So I think that was, I think that was one of those situations where, you look at that back then. That's where we gained that confidence. That to me is what the Nuggets got the other night in San Antonio.
Well, let's see how they build off it. And they'll go out, they'll play tonight, hopefully grab it. And Earl Boykins will join us coming up tomorrow morning to help us break it all down. So we look forward to that. Look forward to visiting with our ESPN baseball insider, Pedro Gomez. What has been responsible for the Rockies' resurgence as they climb back to respectability? He'll join us. Coming up next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to efirstbank.com/business for more details.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
Time now.
This ball is hit to left center field and deep, and it is gone. How about that for career hit number 1,000? Rockies take the lead. What a night for Nolan Arenado.
I was so excited to talk with Pedro Gomez. I jumped over the AT&T Sportsnet highlight right there.
Mm-hmm.
My apologies to Drew Goodman. Outstanding call. But we do welcome in the one and only Pedro Gomez. He's presented by Blake Street Tavern. He joins us now. Pedro, good morning. Let's start right there with Nolan Arenado. In your opinion, you've watched baseball your whole life. Is Nolan Arenado the greatest third baseman you've ever seen? Where would he rank?
No question. And I got to see Brooks Robinson at the end of his career. So I didn't see him in the 60s when he was, the man. But I trust a lot of older scouts and baseball people, and they even say that Arenado is absolutely the best third baseman they've ever seen. And they got to see Brooks Robinson in his heyday. It's just because he's the total package. Look, Robinson was a great hitter as well, but not on the level of Arenado. And defensively, they have said that there are plays Arenado makes that they've never seen Brooks make. So, you know, that's the conversation, really. Mike Schmidt, tremendous third baseman, but more known for his offense than his defense. Arenado, the complete package, and absolutely, he is, without question, we're talking the last few weeks, actually, that was always doom and gloom. And I can hear it in your voice, Mike. You're upbeat right now.
Hey, there's no question. He said he basically quit watching the Rockies until they climbed back to 500. So they're still on his list right now. You know what's really interesting to me? How baseball has changed. There's so many changes, Pedro. But that side of the infield with third baseman and obviously shortstops, and we've got a great combination between Nolan Arenado and Trevor Story. And I think Trevor Story right now, from a power standpoint at the shortstop position, obviously he's a slick fielder, gold glove winner at the shortstop position. But I don't know that there's another guy that puts together the power numbers that Trevor Story does, plus the speed, man. That guy's going to swipe 30 bags. I mean, he can run the bases. Is he right up there in the conversation of the best shortstops in baseball?
Absolutely. And again, I always go to the people I trust the most, who are longtime scouts, who are baseball inside managers, GMs, things like that. And they always put Trevor Story in that conversation. It's a very short list, and he is always mentioned as one of the better shortstops in the game. And it's not because of the offensive numbers. They talk about the total package. So I think that's one of the reasons that you saw Story come up, and all of a sudden, I mean, remember, there wasn't a lot of talk about him coming up, even though he was a high draft pick, but it wasn't like, oh, wait till this kid gets here. And then he, of course, had that great, you know, first two weeks in the big leagues when he seemed to hit a home run every single night. But he has improved himself every time, and that's always the mark of a great player. Yeah, you come on like a comet. Okay, everyone's taking notice. What do you do from there? And he has put in the work, which is why he is mentioned as one of the best shortstops. You know, you put him and Arenado on the left side of the infield. I don't know that anyone in baseball has a better left side of the infield total package, offense, defense, than what the Rockies have, which is why they made such an effort to say these guys aren't going anywhere.
Yeah, there's no question about that. 7-3 in their last 10 games, Pedro. So many different things you can point to as indicators of why they're 7-3. But what's been the most important part of this stretch for the Colorado Rockies? Because we were all like, uh-oh, season's over, you know. Hey, man, I've got a football mentality, so I was there. I was like, oh, gosh. So, what's been the most important or most impressive part of this 7-3 run?
It's absolutely... Obviously, everything's come together. And you know the old adage, you're never as good as you are when things are going well, and you're never as bad as you are when things are going bad. And things were going horribly for the Rockies, and it was always doom and gloom. But it's got to be the starting pitching. And even though you say they're 7-3 in their last 10, the reality is they're 7-1 in their last 8. And that's the bigger thing right now. And they've beaten the Padres. They've beaten the Phillies. They're beating a very good Washington team last night. They're playing good teams, and they are beating good teams. But without question, it's Ramon Marquez. It's Kyle Freeland, who I know is on the 10-day IL right now. But it doesn't – a blister tends to get better. It's not going to be long-term, but it is something that sometimes does recur. So that's something that they obviously have to take care of. But the starting pitching has been what we thought it was going to be coming out of spring training, especially based off the last two seasons. It finally has come around. So it starts and ends with pitching, Mark. You and I know that. We have boys that are pitchers. That is where your success comes from. You can pound the ball all you want, but if you can't pitch, you can't stop the other team from scoring. And that's what's happening. But the confidence also, because even last night, they don't get a good outing from the starting pitching, but they're confident right now. They figure it doesn't matter what the score is. We're going to win, and that's what they're doing right now.
There's no question about it. Bud Black has been stoic throughout this whole process, which has been huge for them as well. Hey, Pedro, man, we appreciate you, brother. We got to run, but thank you so much, man.
All right, guys, take care.
Pedro Gomez, our weekly guest with him, talking some baseball. ESPN's Pedro Gomez, brought to us by Blake Street Tavern. Four Down Territory is coming up here in just a second. And I once again am struck by the national perception of what the Broncos are going to do in the draft versus locally. Field Yates of ESPN came out with a mock draft. He has the Broncos going Drew Lock at number 10. And what do you make of the disconnect between the national media, who continues to zero in on the idea that the Broncos will go quarterback,
right,
versus locally, where nobody thinks they'll go quarterback. Certainly nobody wants him to go quarterback,
right,
by and large, at number 10.
This has been going on now. Didn't they have him taking quarterback at 5 last year, too? The national perspective? The national perspective is Joe Flacco is a one-year fix. He's only got 1 year of guaranteed money. You got to start, you know, you got to find your next John Elway and your next future, you know, franchise quarterback for the next decade plus. You know, that's the whole national narrative is based upon, Mike, exactly that, the national narrative. And the national narrative is you got to find a quarterback in the first round. If you don't find a quarterback in the first round, you're never going to win. You know, you just can't win without a quarterback in the first round. So you got to go. I mean, that's what everybody, that's what people think.
Yeah, see, I think there's it's a different answer. Honestly, I think the national media looks at the Broncos and doesn't see a very good football team. And they see Joe Flacco as being a Band-Aid.
Mm-hmm.
And since they're not a very good football team and you got a Band-Aid approach at quarterback, then at some point you got to get your so-called quarterback of the future. Whereas here, what does Broncoland, what are they conditioned to right now? The idea that the Broncos believe they can compete next year.
Right.
That's the message that Bronco fans have been hearing consistently since Vic Fangio was hired. Okay?
Okay.
We're in it to win it.
Right.
And based on that message, the idea is, well, if we're in it to win it, you got to get a player that can help you win this year.
Right.
That's why most Bronco fans are looking at it, most Bronco media looking at it like, well, why would you draft a quarterback? You're in it to win it this year. Whereas I think the national view of the Broncos is, well, you know, this is just a ho-hum team. So a ho-hum team with a ho-hum quarterback, you might as well go get a young quarterback.
Again, that's why the national media is stupid. Because I agree with the national media that this is a ho-hum team. But you don't fix it by going out and getting a ho-hum average quarterback.
Well,
you fix it by fixing the football team.
Yes.
By drafting good football players that are going to help you build your franchise. And you've got a quarterback who's established himself as an upper echelon quarterback. Not a first-tier guy, but a second-tier guy. So, I mean, the national media thinks you get a quarterback. They think every quarterback that you draft is Baker Mayfield or Patrick Mahomes. And they're just going to showtime you. And that's not how it works.
Showtime! Thank you. Coming up, four down territory. Would Mark Schlereth, former offensive lineman, appreciate the gift of stock? That's next.
Be quiet. I'm answering the question.
This is four down territory.
Let's talk football.
Personal foul, 69. Offense. He was giving them the business.
That guy's pretty good. If you like 6'5", 230-pound quarterbacks, laser, rocket arms.
It's my quarterback. And if you guys do that, man, it's unfair.
On Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan.
Chicken parm, you taste so good.
Ready, break. First down.
I'd like to start out this press conference with a thank you to John Elway.
So you have said to me many times, you think there's egos in an NFL locker room.
Uh-huh.
Go up the back stairs to the front office if you want to see some real egos. And in my years of covering sports, I know a lot of fans want to think that what happens with their favorite teams, it's all black and white. It's all
sure.
It's all easy to understand and explain.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like that. There's a lot of fires that are always smoldering and need to be put out from time to time.
Sure.
I bring all of that up in the context of why the heck did the Broncos postpone, not cancel, postpone the John Elway press conference yesterday? Now, I get it. If it was just, hey, we're too busy, we got too much stuff to do, and all I'm going to do is come out and give you canned cliches,
right,
then we're just going to cancel it. They didn't. They postponed it a day. Do you think this is cut and dried, or do you think there's anything to this?
No, I mean, I think there's, obviously, I think there's something to it. Like, I don't know who called them. What if the Giants got on the phone and said, hey, man, what do you think about moving back? What if the Redskins called and said, hey, what you know, we did a deal with Case Keenum. What do you think about moving back to 15 from 10? What if, like, what if something happened right before the press conference was scheduled and we say, oh, we need all hands on deck. We got to postpone this thing. We're like, things go on this time.
Maybe teams are calling asking about Chris Harris?
Very possible, man. Very possible. Your name floats around all the time. So something went down. It's not like, I mean, the excuse of, yeah, we got caught up. We're really busy. That's a legit excuse. So something.
Like, yeah, but every team does one of these pre-draft press conferences with their coach, general manager, and it's unusual to have them postponed and pushed back like this.
Yeah, well,
all these teams are doing business right now. They're still working in their press conferences.
If somebody calls you, like, you know, the Giants may not understand the difference between East Coast time and Mountain time.
I see.
That gets me many times. I'll be on the East Coast, schedule an interview, and they're like, where were you? What do you mean? It hasn't even started yet. Ah, wait, wrong time zone. Been there many, many times.
Before. Next in four down territory.
Second down.
Empty backfield for Russell with slots to both sides. Stops, looks, got a man wide open. Touchdown, Seahawks, Tyler Lockett.
All right, Seahawks radio. So when you get a four-year, $140 million contract, I guess the first thing you need to do is you need to hand out gifts, which is what Russell Wilson has done, handing out to 13 Seattle Seahawk offensive linemen $12,000 worth of Amazon stock. Now, you probably have received plenty of gifts from quarterbacks over the years as an offensive lineman. Where would you rank Amazon stock amongst all the gifts you've received?
I think it's a really cool gift. It's really thoughtful. It's a cool gift. Amazon. I mean, obviously, they're going to put every mall in America out of business, right? It's probably going to continue to climb in value. I just think it's really cool.
Here was the note he attached.
Okay, what was the note?
You sacrifice your physical and mental well-being to protect me, which in turn allows me to provide and care for my family. This does not go unnoticed, and it is never forgotten. You have invested in my life. This is my investment into yours.
I'm a special little guy.
Is it just me or is it getting a little dusty in here?
What? Is that some of Mark's awesomeness leaking out right now?
Didn't Emmett Smith once give pictures of himself to his offensive line?
Did he really?
Yeah,
did he really?
Like glamour shot. Glitch and glamour shot.
Now, if you were a quarterback gifting somebody, what would you give them?
What would I give?
Here you go, everyone. Here's your own tub of stinking good green chili. Did I mention we now have queso?
Yeah, I would give. Yeah, I would give them all a free chili for life as long as you continue to play here.
There you go. Next in four down territory.
Third down.
He hasn't really proven to me, besides the year before he got hurt in his first year, of really the MVP candidate. He needs to get back to that mold. And I think personally, if he can't get out of the second round in the next two, you know, maybe 3 years, really 2 years, to be honest with you, if he can't get out of the second round, they should look to possibly draft another quarterback, because you just don't know about his durability.
Well, Donovan McNabb, speaking honestly about Carson Wentz, has walked back his comments a little bit after the firestorm of criticism that he received. He went on to tweet, "For those of you who misread, didn't understand, were confused, or just didn't like my comments, let me clarify it for you. Let me start by saying there's no beef, riff, or ill will towards Carson Wentz or the Eagles. My comments were strictly based off of experience and understanding of how the business of football works." Well, I mean, is he right about the sense that Carson Wentz has now entered the stage of his career where he has gone from promising, can't miss wunderkind to he's kind of got something to prove? Not only can he win big, but can he stay healthy?
Well, I think if you're around this league long enough, everybody feels that way. I mean, every year you've got something to prove.
Yeah, but you got, but you enter the league in a nice, with a nice honeymoon phase of you're the franchise quarterback, mm-hmm. you're going to be the guy for the next decade plus, all of this, it's just sort of assumed, and then the harsh reality of what have you done and where are you going sure. starts to set in.
Yeah, it's a what have you done for me league, and it's always been that way. I think the biggest thing where Donovan is right is, man, well, you got to prove that you can stay healthy. You got to prove that you can stay healthy for 16, you know, and lead us to the playoffs when you're healthy. Now, that second year in the league before he tore his ACL, man, he was playing really good football and they were, you know, on their way. And then Nick Foles comes in and does what he does. And then last year they were an average football team. They were struggling and Nick Foles comes in and kind of bails them out. And changes the tenor of that offense to where, you know, it was Carson Wentz to Zach Ertz. That was like the only combination. And, you know, Foles came out and started spreading the ball to the wide receivers. And then, you know, you heard all the wide receivers chirping about, you know, how much better they are now with Foles playing quarterback. So there was some controversy within that, but I know they love Carson Wentz and, you know, he's just got to prove, to me, he doesn't have to prove that he can play. He's got to prove that he can stay healthy.
Well, and that's the thing, because in the last 2 years, he's played a grand total of 24 out of a possible 32 games.
Mm-hmm.
But in those 24 games, 54 touchdowns to 14 picks.
Yeah, pretty damn good.
Not bad. Next in four down territory.
Fourth down. I have to do what I need to do for myself and for my teammates. So whatever team picks me, they're going to get a hardworking quarterback and a guy's going to lead the team. And you know, the biggest thing I can do is just be ready for the moment.
Well, that is Dwayne Haskins, who's waiting to see what happens on draft day. But how about this? The team that could possibly throw a real wrench into the first round? One guess. The Raiders. NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport says the Raiders are looking at some sort of surprise pick at number 4 that would necessitate absolute secrecy.
Ooh.
Lending intrigue to the idea of why all the scouts were sent home over the weekend.
Surprise. Surprise at number 4.
Surprise at number 4.
Wow. I mean, what could...
He went on to say, Rappaport did, that is what I understand, a pick at number 4 that we are not expecting. So what that actually is, he said, I do not know.
I have no idea.
I'm not sure.
So what a shocker. It could be the Raiders that turn the first round or the first part of the first round completely on its ear. That'll do it for Four Down Territory, our tour around the NFL. Bring it to you each and every morning at 7:30. And speaking of our draft coverage, can't wait. This Thursday, it's the Fans Draft Party presented by Coors Light and Piper Electric at Stoney's Uptown Joint. Tom Nalen, D-Mac, Nick Ferguson, and Stink will all be there starting at 5 o'clock. So we look forward to that. Make sure you join us at Stoney's Uptown Joint. See what the Broncos do in the draft and the rest of the draft coverage all night long. All right, coming up, Von Miller says he'll be doing more of this? Really? Von? No. That's next.
It's Schlereth and Evans on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Don't forget, get question Mark coming up here at the top of the hour. You got a question for Mark. Just hit us up on the RamosLot.com text line, 303-713-1043.
I am going to interrupt you, and I'm going to question Mike right now.
Okay.
Because I've got this cool kind of trivia thing that I just found on Twitter while I was kind of, you know, meandering around. Where I get all my information is Twitter. That's pretty much 100% of my information comes from. 30 years ago today, the greatest top 5 of all time was selected. 4 Hall of Famers. Today is the anniversary of the 1989 draft. Here are the Hall of Famers that were drafted in the first 5 picks.
Okay.
Troy Aikman.
Mm-hmm.
Barry Sanders.
Mm.
Derek Thomas, Deion Sanders.
Wow.
Can you name the one guy that was drafted that didn't go to the Hall of Fame that year in the top 5?
89.
Speaking of which, it's 89 is where I was drafted. 10th round, 263 overall.
So you did not go in the top five.
I did not go in the top five. I did not go to the Hall of Fame. I like to refer to myself as Mark Schlereth, not Hall of Famer.
1989.
Yes.
Boy, that's a 1989. I have no idea.
I believe this player went between.
Give me a hint.
Troy Aikman and Barry Sanders.
So he's like second?
I think he was second.
1989.
Michigan State.
Okay. 1989. That wasn't Mandarich, was it?
Yes.
Tony Mandarich?
Tony Mandarich.
I still can remember
the Sports SI Illustrated cover. Yeah.
I mean, that guy was a walking testament to steroid abuse.
Oh, wow.
I mean, he was just...
Remember, he's pushing
to
that...
To call him yoked.
Right.
To call him swole.
He was pushing that, like, the shopping cart, right? With groceries in it and stuff.
Yes.
And he had, like, this, like... I don't know if I don't think he had a shirt on. He was just like in a pair of football cutoff pants.
Yes.
It was awesome. Awesome. Tony Mandarich. I believe number two overall at the time to the.
Yeah. Easily one of the top five draft busts of all time.
Did he go to the Packers at number two?
I do believe it was the Packers. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, this is a little fun game, a little word association game. All right.
Okay.
Greatest draft bust of all time. Go.
Oh, I would have to say the quarterback that the Raiders took,
Jamarcus Russell. Okay.
Maybe Ryan Leaf.
Ryan Leaf was who I thought of.
Yeah.
Mandarich is right up there.
Mandarich is up there.
Paxton Lynch is right there too.
Of all time.
All time.
No.
All time. Sorry. Can I get the music? Just looking to get another excuse to continue the Paxton Lynch smear campaign. Now into day number, what is it, 807, I
Something
think.
Something like that, yeah. Yeah, still smearing.
Gone but not forgotten.
No.
As we still continue to smear Paxton Lynch.
I wonder if Russell Wilson got Paxton anything. Back of chewing gum or something.
That's right. He is in Seattle, isn't he?
Yeah,
right now, he is the Seahawks backup quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
No, you're funny.
Odds that Paxton Lynch makes the Seahawks as Russell Wilson's backup.
Oof. 60-40?
Wow. 60% it happens?
Yeah. They don't have anybody else on the roster right now.
Yeah. So what does that mean? Are you saying there's nobody else out there right now that you could bring in that could be better than Paxton?
Could you just see? This is what I envision happening. Dang it, where's Paxton? Where is he? Somebody go to Ivers. You know, they have the good clam chowder at Ivers fish and chips.
Yeah.
He's probably at Ivers again. Somebody go to Ivers to pick him up. No? Anyone?
People are like, people on the run must like,
I'm the only one.
Leave Paxton alone. Paxton isn't here. Let me tell you something. I will never leave Paxton alone. Because Paxton Lynch is a walking, talking embodiment of somebody who was given everything and wasted it. And that is unforgivable, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
What's the line for whom much is given, much is expected?
Yes.
I'm sorry. He was given. Look at that. Somebody just sent the cover. Look at that, dude.
Oh, your pole's in the way. Your mic stand is in the way. But yeah, up. Yeah, there it is. Oh, he didn't have a shopping cart. That was the shopping cart picture was inside. Yeah.
But yeah, right. Look, I mean, that guy just
look at
under the incredible
holy yokitude.
6'6", 315. Pounds.
350 and just like ripped.
Just ripped. Bullsey kind of looks like that.
Stop it.
What?
No. No.
Why, Mark? What makes you think that I would want a wedge drive when it comes to Garrett Bowles?
Because
why would you think that I'm trying to just push your button by getting you to talk about Garrett Bowles?
Because that's the kind of thing that you do. Let's move on. Let's move. Bolt, you know what? New coach, new system. You know, they're going to.
Sounds like you're going clean slate with Bolsey.
I'm going to give him a chance. I'm going to give him a chance to get off the mutton busting circuit and, you know, get back to playing good football.
So that probably means you don't want them to draft a tackle.
Oh, no. I would love them to draft a tackle.
Why?
Well, although I'm giving him a chance, I don't buy it.
Ah,
I'm not bought in, Mike. Not completely bought in.
Okay. All right. Von Miller does a thing with Sirius XM, kind of a regular appearance on Sirius XM.
Okay.
And he was asked about this upcoming season, working with Vic Fangio, new defense. What he thinks of the defense, and he gave a very interesting answer.
I'm gonna be more in coverage this year. You know, I've always felt like coverage is a huge part of my game. You know, I don't want to just rush the passer every single play. So many pass rush moves that you can have, you know, over a course of a game. I feel like the team can really use, you know, my pass rush abilities. So I'll be dropping the coverage and I'll be rushing the passer this season. But you know, Coach Fangio, he's an excellent defensive coordinator. He has answers for everything.
Did you hear the host? I don't know who that was. He went, huh?
Hmm.
And that was my reaction. Actually, it was a little bit stronger than, It was, what?
Because
All I remember is whenever Vaughn or Bradley Chubb were asked to drop into coverage last year.
Right.
Under a Vance Joseph, Joe Woods defense, people lost their minds.
Well,
wait a minute. You got Von Miller, one of the great pass rushers of all time, a guy who you signed to a record contract, the biggest contract ever given to a defensive player. You're paying him to pass rush the quarterback, not drop back into coverage, bozos. And now I'm hearing that's Vic Fangio's plan for Von Miller, and I would assume Bradley Chubb. Walk me off the edge here, Mark.
Well, I think if you look. If you went back through the film last year, there were times when Khalil Mack dropped into coverage, not very often, and probably not in any critical situations. And so I think you're going to have to just trust that Vic Fangio actually knows what he's doing, and you'll drop him in coverage when you have certain blitzes or certain things you want to take advantage of. One thing I know about Vaughn is when Vaughn lines up on the edge, you've got to figure out a way to contend with Vaughn. And so if you can essentially tie two guys up and free up other pass rushers and then Vaughn's dropping into the flat, like you've effectively won. And I think when you use it creatively like that, it can be very effective. If you're locking up, you know, Von Miller, you're locking up Bradley Chubb with a running back or whatever, I think that's stupid. Like that's not their forte. But again, you know, Vic, I think the other thing you have to understand is Vic is more of a zone principal guy than he is a man up guy. And so kind of different defensive philosophies. So dropping a skilled pass rusher on a first down throw in a flat is way different than a third down critical situation saying you're locked up in man because we like to play a lot of cover one, you know. A completely different kind of conceptual aspect of football. And so I think what I would do was I would give a guy that's been a coordinator for 30 years and has coordinated great defense, I'd give him the benefit of the doubt and say he knows a heck of a lot more about coordinating defense than I do. I promise you that. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. When Joe Woods and Vance Joseph did it, you're just like, oh, Lord, have mercy. Come on, guys.
Okay. But you know that honeymoon will last as long as it takes until a quarterback completes a, you know, 35-yard pass.
Sure.
In which we see him standing back there for 3 seconds and Vaughn is chasing somebody in coverage.
If you're running a wheel route and Vaughn's in man coverage and he's 14 yards behind the running back and you score a 46-yard touchdown, then yeah, then we're going to say maybe not a great call. You know, people are going to go ballistic over that. So, yeah, I get that part of it.
But did you really believe his answer when he said, you know, I don't want to rush the quarterback on every single play.
No.
I mean, I only have so many moves.
By the way, if you hear that again, he's talking about, he even mixes himself up.
Go ahead, play it again.
I want to listen.
All right. This is Vaughn.
I'm gonna be more in coverage this year. You know, I've always felt like, you know, coverage is a huge part of my game. You know, I don't want to just rush the passer every single play. There's so many pass rush moves that you can have, you know, over a course of a game. I feel like the team can really use, you know, my pass rush abilities.
I feel the team can really use my pass rush abilities. He doesn't. Did you hear that? He was trying to say my pass coverage abilities. He went right back to pass rush abilities.
Yeah, I feel like the team can really use, you know, my pass rush abilities.
So you think he's proud of his pass coverage abilities?
No, he's basically mixing his metaphors there. He's like, no, I'm gonna drop back in coverage a lot more. And he's trying to say, yeah, the team can use my pass coverage abilities, and he still said pass rush abilities, because he knows what he is. Hey, we're gonna drop you back a little bit more. Instead of, you know, six times a game, we're gonna drop you back seven times a game. Seven? What?
Further proof that Vic Fangio in the honeymoon phase, people on RamosLaw.com text line are rushing to remind me about how Vaughn dropped into coverage and picked off Tom Brady in an AFC championship game.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I don't remember that rush to defend VJ and Woods. But...
Right, well, that was... But
that's because they were, I guess, inexperienced, and Vic Fangio's been around forever, so whatever Vic says goes, right?
Again, remember, Wade Phillips was coordinating that defense, and one of the criticisms, and we had people on that would say, hey, one of the criticisms of Wade Phillips is Wade is going to play what he's going to play 90% of the time, and, you know, he's just going to... That's what he does, right? And the praise that he got for that game was... the variations of defenses, the blitzes that he brought, and some of the different things that he did, like dropping Von Miller into coverage.